You are listening to the Tour des Flâneurs, the cycling podcast at the 2022 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapien, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Well, we open there, the 2022 Tour de France, with the sound of the Danish fans in Tivoli Gardens on Wednesday evening at the team presentation, cheering for their favourite, the Danish favourite, Jonas Vingegaard, the runner-up in last year's Tour de France, admittedly a distant second to Tadej Pogacar. But this year, a really key rider because he is part of Primoz Roglic's Jumbo-Visma team. And, well, at the start of the tour, will certainly be in a support role. But who knows? The tour is the tour and anything can happen on the road from Tivoli Gardens to the Rue de Rivoli. Tivoli to Rivoli.
Pretty good.
We're here in the centre of Copenhagen on the eve of the Tour de France. And my name is Lionel Burney. Usually you would hear the voice of Richard Moore welcoming cycling podcast listeners to our Tour de France coverage. But many of you will know that Richard passed away at the end of March. And so this is a rather poignant podcast. I feel a bit like a sort of domestique who's been thrust into team leadership role. I feel slightly underprepared, not really used to being number one on the mic, missing Richard on a personal level, of course, very much so, but on a professional level, his absence will be felt so keenly. But we will remember the Buffalo over the next 3 weeks. But we've assembled a team, a crack team for the Tour de France, welcoming back François Tomaso, a veteran of how many tours, François?
I don't know. I lost count. I think it's the 34th. Because I was told by the press chief of the Tour de France, Philippe Sud, that if I do one more, 35 tours, I'll be given a silver plate.
Wow.
I don't know if it'll be enough to convince me to do another one, but we'll see.
Well, you said that last year, to be fair, François. This is, I think, your sixth tour for the cycling podcast. You came on board in Dusseldorf in 2017. Thank you very much for joining us again. Very much looking forward to travelling around France. I mean, if nothing else, François, just make sure the restaurants are booked when we get back to France.
Not too sure about the Danish restaurants. I mean, I know about Danish restaurants. As you know, the best two restaurants in the world are in Copenhagen. Unfortunately, they're all booked up, and I don't think the cycling podcast maybe has the means to entertain us. I mean, listeners, maybe, you know, I'm as you can imagine, I'm trying to convince Lionel that we have to visit one of the best, two best restaurants in the world. But, well, and especially as I was told that one of them makes the best flan in the world. So we'll see. But anyway, yeah, you can count on me as soon as we land in France to book the right restaurants. As for Copenhagen, we'll see.
One of them is called Noma, right?
Noma, yeah.
And, well, how many Michelin stars has that got?
Three. I mean, you know, the two of them are three-star Michelin restaurants. One of them makes very strange things, like stuff made of bees. I don't know what they do with bees, you know, but we'll check out and we'll tell you.
I'm looking forward to
well,
it.
As you say, François, it might be a little bit above our budget. Maybe we'll wander past, press our noses up against the window and look enviously at the menu. Three Michelin stars for Noma, five Michelin stars for our other host on the cycling podcast. Welcome back, Mitch Docker. Former pro rider, of course, host of a very fine podcast in your own right, Life in the Peloton. And you saw us over the line in Paris last year. You did the final week of last year's tour and you're joining us for the first week of this year's tour. Thank you very much and welcome.
I'm excited to be back. I didn't know if I'd get the call up again. I had such a great time with Richard, as you said, and with Francois here. And we had a ball. I tell you what, I was like, whoa, is this how it rolls? No, one of these are great to listen to. And that was a great vibe. And you gave me the call up this year. Really proud to be back. Also, glad to get out of that winter, Melbourne winter. My wife, I'm not sure if she's going to be listening to the podcast, but she'll be hating to hear this. She's back there with the three kids in the winter. And I'm over here in the sun drinking a beautiful beer in the middle of Denmark, in the middle of Copenhagen, sorry, in Denmark.
Well, we'll come on to the beer. We'll also come on to the Michelin guide, Mitch, because as we go through the first weeks, I want your verdict on the hotels. Richard actually booked all of the hotels when the tour route was announced back in October. And so there's an extra poignancy there. This is our kind of homage to Richard Moore in so many ways. But I want your verdict as a former rider on the hotels we stay in, because you'll have stayed in thousands of hotels over the years, I guess. Training camps and races. So we'll do that over the weekend, and then when the race gets back to France, of course. But this is our kind of scene setter, establishing our coverage of the Tour de France. It's not going to be speculation heavy, is it? We're not going to be talking about who might win the Tour de France. Any number of riders called Tadej Pogacar might win the Tour de France. I don't know. Can we look any further than that?
Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. I've got some curveballs out there.
Yeah, well, we said we were not going into that, so we're not getting there. Okay, so I'm not saying anything.
Apparently, you've already had a heated debate on the flight from Paris to Copenhagen this afternoon.
No, it was not exactly on who is going to win the tour. It was on team tactics. We were hoping that, you know, because Mitch, as you know, is an insider. He's got lots of insider's information, and he was told by a former British rider that Ineos Grenadiers may attempt the same tactics as Bora did on the Giro, which is all-out attack, and they have the team to do that. And I was thinking that if they do that, Bora do the same, and then Jumbo are forced to do the same, we're going to be in for an exciting tour. I named three teams. I suppose, let's be honest, that there are only three teams with a reasonable chance of winning the tour in this this year. So if those three teams, you know, act the way we were, you know, fancying them to do in the camp coming here, it would be really exciting. And so the names of the winners are in those teams, right?
Well, we'll unpick all of that as the race goes on. Mitch, of course, as a former rider, you've got a great insight into what goes on in the racing. But as we know, the Tour de France is about so much more than just the racing. So we'll be trying to capture some of the atmosphere as we travel across Denmark initially and then through northern France.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapien. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insight, and personalized analytics. We are here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success. The Super Sapiens Podcast. Homo sapiens meet Super Sapiens.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to episode one of the Super Sapiens Podcast. I'm your host, Zylan Fanake. With me is my co-host, David Lipman, the Director of Applied Science and Content at Super Sapiens. David, we are here, we are published, we are live, we are doing this.
Yeah, great, thank you. Very exciting and super happy to be here.
Your ears aren't deceiving you. Super Sapiens now have their own podcast. Super Sapiens are our title sponsors, of course, and Zylan Vanek and Dr. David Lipman have started a podcast to explain how elite athletes are using Super Sapiens to monitor their blood glucose in real time, hone their nutrition strategy, hone their training, and improve their performance. You can find it in all good podcast apps, and we'll put a link in our show notes. We're not going to do a blow-by-blow preview of the stages because week three is, you know, it's a long way away. And as you said, Francois, who knows what will happen before there? We might not all make it. I mean, COVID, the spectre of COVID, the shadow is kind of over the Tour de France. We've had a number of riders pulling out already. And I suppose that's where I wanted to start with you, Mitch, because as a former sprinter and a lead out man and a road captain, I really want to ask you the key question. One of the biggest stories in the run up to the tour is the exclusion of Mark Cavendish from the Quickstep lineup. So two questions. First of all, if you were selecting that team, would you have put Mark Cavendish in the initial eight? And secondly, once Tim de Klerk was ruled out with COVID, would you have called him up instead of Florian Senechal, the newly crowned French champion, of course?
It's been the big debate all year, hasn't it? It's been quite an interesting thing, and I'll put it up there, and something I think we can talk about later on is the new point system. as a non-pro now, I'm loving this. It's added another interesting thing about watching cycling. Our team's going to be in, our team's not going to be in. And the Tour de France debate about Jakobsen and Cavendish has been also that debate that, you know, there's an equal argument on either side. I guess to answer your question, I couldn't have excluded him from the eight because just that chance for him to take the record, that ominous record that you were talking about all last year that we couldn't mention. I think it just crescendoed there at the Champs-Élysées. I was there last year when he didn't get it. And it's almost like it was just setting the stage for a really exciting tour this year for him to ride. To answer your second question, when he wasn't in the team and Tim de Klerk was out to slot him in, I'd say no. To go against that, because now they're committed to Fabio, and to put another sprinter in there, I think that would come away with nothing. Two sprinters, and Seneschal has proven himself time and time again as a really good lead-out man, as a workhorse, as a useful tool. And I think they've taken a guy out. It's not the exact same rider, but they've slotted him with the next best thing. I agree with that decision, but maybe I don't agree with the original decision.
So what you're saying is that Cavendish should have been included in place of one of the other riders, but once it was de Klerk that was positive for COVID, they needed another kind of workhorse to go into that team, because having two sprinters and no de Klerk and no similar rider, that might have upset the harmony of the team, the balance of the team, and actually might have counted against their chances of winning any sprints.
Exactly. I don't think it would either had to be Cavendish or Jakobsen, and then after that, that's it. You can only go with one sprinter, in my opinion. Otherwise, you end up looking like AG Tuar of the sort of early 2000s, where they had three guys in the top 10, no one ever winning.
I mean, Cavendish last year, he would make the point that while he hasn't broken Eddy Merckx's record and claimed it on his own, he does share the record. He is the record holder, albeit jointly. So I suppose, I know, for me personally, you know, winning 35, that sets him ahead of Eddy Merckx, the greatest rider of all time. I mean, do you buy into this sort of internet conspiracy theory that Patrick Lefebvre is doing his old mate Eddy Merckx a favour, leaving Cavendish at home so Merckx retains a share of the record?
I had a great opportunity this year, which is to translate Mark Cavendish's book Tour de Force into French, which kind of forced me to be in the mind of Mark Cavendish, even though we know that Daniel Freiber and Peter Cousins were a little bit involved in writing this book as well. But it was fascinating in a way. You could still hear the voice of Cav in there. And I couldn't help, while I was kind of living this Tour de France with him and the way he managed to finally do the tour and win those stages, still, there is a kind of bully in him. You know, you can tell, and he was very gentlemanly about it. He was, I mean, translated the book and kind of being Mark Cavendish for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the time it took me to translate it, made me much more like him more. I kind of, you know, tried to impersonate in a way what he was. But he's a competitor, he's a sprinter, and sprinters... Like strikers in football, they need confidence, they need trust. This is why I disagree in a way with Mitch about the first. You can have two goal scorers, two strikers in a football team playing the same role. Otherwise, they thread on each other's feet and it doesn't work. And had Cav been there with Fabio Jakobsen being young, we know where he comes back from, and he needs in his confidence, in his trust, in the whole team behind him. Really, in my mind, Cav would have been kind of almost unwittingly a kind of bully. You're always there, you know, in case. Mm. What would Cav do? You start a stage. Fabio Jakobsen is a protected sprinter. What does Cav do in this? Okay, would have gone for a few battles along the road, but what would his role be, really?
I agree with you. Like, he couldn't have been in the team at the same time. No. That's what I was saying, is that
so
you can't have two roosters in there.
That's right. And the record is great for us fans, it's great for us journalists, but what does it matter for? Once he won a stage in the Giro, great. It was kind of, we thought, let's see what happens next. He might have won another one here, but let's face it, you're Patrick Lefebvre. normally Fabio Jakobsen has a chance to win more than one, probably 2, 3, 4, 5, who knows, you know. And you know, I'm well placed to say that because I'm the old generation, old school, maybe my last Tour de France, like Cav. You know, I'm kind of in the same situation as we say in French, place aux jeunes, you know. It's time for the young generation to emerge. You can't wait another year for Fabio Jakobsen to make his really, really great Tour debut. So I've come to accept that, once again, by translating his book, that Mark Cavendish is as class as a person. And I didn't find his tweets, you know, which sounded, which was pretty nice and polite, like accepting the decision. I, after reading the book and getting really deep into it, I think it's sincere. Of course, it's frustrating. Of course, it's probably, but I really believe. I've come to love Mark Cavendish, and I think he's, and I think when he says. That you know he wishes the best to Fabio, and he already said in the book last year, you know, all the good things he thinks about Fabio Jakobsen. So in a way, if Fabio Jakobsen wins 2, 3, 4, 5 stages, in a way, it will have been the passing of the baton from the greatest sprinter of all time to one of the most promising sprinters.
I mean, Cavendish would get in probably 12 to 14 of the other teams who might want a sprinter. That's the great irony, isn't it? It's because he's in Quickstep. But then there's the question, would he win in those teams? Would he have the support necessary? Would he have the bike necessary? I mean, they're all imponderables, aren't they? The questions that we can't perhaps answer. But it does rob the Tour of an A-list sprinter and of some real drama. I mean, you know, it would have been incredible seeing Cavendish and Jakobsen, two alpha males, sorting out the sprint responsibilities in Quickstep. But Jakobsen now gets a free run at it. What about the other sprinters, Mitch? Because he'll go potentially head-to-head with Dylan Groenewegen of Bike Exchange, who, well, they have raced together since that terrible incident at the Tour of Poland where Groenewegen took responsibility for causing the crash that gave Jakobsen such serious injuries. Jakobsen's won a couple of times, but recently they went properly head-to-head at the Tour de Hungary, and Groenewegen won that one. So the potential to see Groenewegen go up against Jakobsen. Then there's Caleb Ewan, Jasper Philipsen, Alexander Kristoff maybe, Alberto Dainese, who won a stage at the Giro. Can you look beyond that? Who have you got your eyes on for the sprint stages, Mitch?
Well, I'm actually interested to see who is coming into form. You know, all the guys you're speaking about there have all had their own path to the Tour de France. It sounds obvious to say that, but you know, Groenewegen, he went to the Dauphiné and got sort of his ass kicked there because it wasn't a parkour for him. So has that damaged his confidence? That's one thing I'm wondering. Bike Exchange is going with the team around him. You know, they've got Yatesy there floating solo, but the rest is there for him. And then again, Caleb Ewan coming off the back of a pretty not a great Giro, actually. So again, is his confidence being damaged? Everything going on with that team? I'm interested to see what's going on too with their lead out. Their inclusion of Van Rensburg, who's got a story of his own, only getting a contract mid-season and all of a sudden flourishing. This is what Caleb Ewan needs. And you said, yeah, we're missing one of the A sprinters, but I'm obviously an Australian. I'm interested to see Caleb back at his best, back at the Tour, doing some sort of Cavendish-style sprinting. I think that's going to be the really interesting battle for me, Jakobsen and Ewan. Opposed to Groenewegen, I feel like Groenewegen isn't back to his best yet, and nothing against Bike Exchange. They don't have that train drilled as a Quickstep train.
One thing I would like to say, because we're in Copenhagen, is that maybe we won't see Mark Cavendish beat the record, but we already admit, all of us, that is the greatest sprinter. Maybe not in the history of cycling, but in the history of the Tour de France, for sure. But if Jakobsen wins a couple of sprint stages, bunch sprints on the Tour de France, Michael Morkou might really claim to be the best lead-out man there ever was. And that would be, you know, winning with Bennett, Cavendish, Jakobsen. We already know that potentially that's the case. He's the best lead-out man that ever was. But if he manages to, you know, lead out Fabio to win a couple of stages, then we would see really the crowning of an absolutely astounding lead out man. I don't know how many, you know, victories he can claim. I mean, we could count, but it you know, it's already impressive, and it would be even more so.
Celebrate America's 250th with Dish. For a limited time, get an extra $250 off when you sign up. Call 888-ADD-DISH or visit dish.com today and use code DISH250 to claim your $250 savings. That's 888-ADD-DISH. Offer ends August 12th. Terms apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now, here we are in Copenhagen, and we've been talking about the sprinters primarily because the Mark Cavendish will-he-won't-he start the Tour de France was one of the big pre-race stories, and the sprinters will probably feature over the weekend here in Denmark, almost certainly on Sunday, but possibly also on Saturday, depending on what the weather's like going over that huge bridge. We'll see whether the wind blows. At the moment, the forecast looks fairly benign, but anything can happen in the next 24, 48 hours. But here we are, Mitch, enjoying our first beer of the Tour de France.
We certainly are, and I'm going to bring the beer reviews back. Maybe not every day, but you know what? I said last year there wasn't going to be many beers in the south of France there, and all of a sudden, Francois, Richard and I were just swimming
Jacobson.
In beer. We were
Jacobson.
Just beered out. Well, I wouldn't say that. Let's not go that far. But we've started with a Carlsberg. We're in the center of Copenhagen right now. And I was like, well, you walked out, Lionel, with a Carlsberg. It seemed very stereotypical. But actually, it's got quite a good history. It was brewed by Jacobsen, you know, pretty common. Jacobsen, not Fabio, but J.C. Jacobsen. In 1847, in the streets of Denmark, Copenhagen, Denmark. And he started brewing in his own cellar at the age of 36.
Wow.
Which I am just on the cusp. I'm 36 now. So, you know, things are lining up. This is just to give you a bit of background on it, everyone knows this beer, so I don't have to do too much. It's a lager, European ale.
The news ABV there is watch out for Docker Pills.
What alcohol percent
in a few
is it?
Years.
It is. 5%.
4.6, you say.
4.6, that's right. So, there's not much more to say about that. Everyone knows it, but I think we've started on a good note. And as a Guinness, from what I'm told, is there's nothing like drinking a Guinness than in Ireland. There's nothing like drinking a Carlsberg than in the streets of Copenhagen, I can tell you.
Docker Pills, or maybe Mitchberg, your
brewed
home
brew. On the streets of Lancefield, Victoria.
Yeah. Well, let's continue the Danish theme, because a little bit earlier today I met up with a Danish journalist just to find out a bit more about Copenhagen and the other parts of Denmark that the tour is exploring over the next 3 days, and just what it means to Denmark and Danish cycling for Copenhagen to finally host the Grand Départ.
Well, tell me, what has the atmosphere been like? Because it's been a long wait for this Grand Départ in Copenhagen, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, this is a small country. And we're also kind of, I like to say that the Danes as a people, we're very modest. And to see such a great spectacle as the Tour de France just yesterday in the Tivoli Garden with the Grand Départ, it was kind of like two worlds meeting. And it was a very, I think it was a very nice fit together. I mean, the enthusiasm of the crowds, it was kind of like released yesterday, and everybody that I've been talking to have been like, okay, now we're here. Now let's get this started. Because we've been waiting so long. It always seemed like a dream almost. But now the Tour de France is here and we're ready.
I've been to Copenhagen a few times, but I'm always blown away by just what a cycling friendly city is. I mean, where we're standing just behind the central Copenhagen train station here, there's just almost a field of bicycles. I mean, if your bike is sort of 7 or 8 deep there, how do you get your bike back when you get back from your commute? I mean, it's like they're almost stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, you don't have to be shy. Just when I had to park on the other side of this building right here, I had to move 2 or 3 bikes to squeeze mine because it had to stand up next to a lamppost not to fall over. And you don't have to be, you can't be shy with your bikes, and it's okay for other people to touch your bike, just don't steal it, which is of course also an issue here as in every other city. So it's I guess it's like a cultural thing. I mean, I've been living in the city for 8 years now, and you just get used to it, really.
And it's an easy city to get around on two wheels, I guess, just simply because I think the bikes outnumber the cars, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think I heard somebody say that unlike any other city, when you're on your bike here, you're part of the majority, not part of a minority. And you feel like you're part of this wave that moves through the city, and some way it also makes you feel safer to be part of like a group of cyclists going down a back path. You feel safe because if everybody just keeps their trajectory, really, then you're going to get through traffic easily. The cars will stop for you and they will give you leeway.
I mean, the opening time trial will show off Copenhagen to great effect, won't it? 10 Danish riders on the start list. Jonas Vingegaard got the biggest reception at the team presentation last night, didn't he? Clearly, everybody here is behind him. But in the sporting terms, what's the kind of sense of anticipation for the Tour de France and for the opening weekend?
I think in a sporting sense, I've talked about modesty before, and I think we're also trying to be modest. I mean, of course, we're hoping for a storm when they have to cross the Great Belt Bridge, but probably not going to be like that. And it might even just become like a normal mass sprint. But I think the expectation is there's going to be massive crowds. Like, everybody wants to see this thing happening. Just down in my yard where I live, in my apartment building, people have been talking about the tour, like, oh, are you going to go see the tour? And everybody are going. So I think massive crowds, maybe the bike race might not even be the main focus, because the result might be a standard stage, but the crowds and the vibe around is going to be pretty exceptional, I think.
So what should we expect from the racing then? The opening time trial, it's a city centre course. Then we've got the two stages which may or may not go the way of the sprinters. As you said, the huge bridge. I mean, what a feat of architecture and engineering that is. And it's not the only one in Denmark, but is it the biggest bridge in Denmark, that one?
I think it's the biggest bridge in Denmark, and I think it's like the second or third largest suspension bridge in the world. So it's pretty exceptional. And I mean, I was born after the bridge was built, and just like the way it just ties the country together. I mean, before you had to take the ferry to get from one part of the country to the other. Otherwise, you couldn't get there. You have to fly. So what it did for Denmark as a country, all these bridge building is a very big part of our culture, because Denmark is a small, even smaller country now because we have these bridges. We can go from one end to the country, of one end to the other in like 3-4 hours. So big part of Danish culture, I'd say.
I mean, I don't like to speculate on the weather. It's absolutely glorious here today. Sun's shining, very warm. The forecast earlier in the week was that maybe there would be some wind on the bridge, crosswinds on the bridge. Goes without saying, it's very exposed. It must also have some kind of climb on it as well. It's not going to be dead flat, is it? Because those bridges tend not to be. So, I mean, it's going to be spectacular, even if the wind doesn't blow, right?
Yeah, I think so as well. I can't remember the exact gradient, but it's a pretty long like section that'll rise. And I mean, you have to be careful to not put too much in it, because these racers are exceptional, and to them it's not like anything will experience. So it might not cause that spectacle, but I mean, I just can't imagine that something might happen on this stage, because Mads Pedersen on the Trek Segafredo, these are his roads that they'll be going through, and if he is in within reach of the yellow jersey after this time trial, I just can't imagine he might not go to his sports director and be like, okay, on this road and this road, it's going to be really narrow. Let's try and put the pedal down and see if something happens on the first part of the stage before the bridge. And if that happens, then something really spectacular could happen, even if there might not be any wind.
What about Quickstep? Because it's almost a Danish team, isn't it? With three riders in there, Askren, Honoré, and I'm going to ask you, Paul, how do you say Michael Moorcock, Mikkel Merku? I mean, we use it interchangeably because we try to respect the Danish pronunciation, but it's kind of difficult for the English palate to get around that word.
I mean, we appreciate you trying. Like, really, like, you don't have to, like, just try to say Merku. Mikkel Merku, it's a difficult one, and the latter thing you said there I was like, hey, this guy's trying to say his name properly, and that we respect a lot, because this is a really, let's say, very difficult language, and not many people speak it. But about Quickstep, the expectations, I guess, for me are not as much here in Denmark. Of course, Michael Mørkøv, I think he can pilot Fabio Jakobsen to the win on stage three. And a secret weapon there is, I've talked to Kasper Askren earlier in the year, and he lives very close to the course on stage three, and he said he had ridden that course maybe 100 times. So he knows the road and the finale into Sønderborg, where the sprint is going to be. I think Quickstep will have a trick up the sleeve and will know exactly where to be at the right time for that finale. So I think they're gonna win stage three. That's my bet, at least.
Science in Sport is supporting the cycling podcast at the 2022 Tour de France. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the cycling podcast. If you want to get 25% off all Science in Sport's products, as ever, the code is SISCP25 and the website is scienceinsport.com. You can fuel your ride, your recovery with energy bars, energy drinks, and my particular favourite, the tiramisu energy bake. So the code is SISCP25 and the website scienceinsport.com. Francois, you said there's probably only three teams that can win the Tour de France. Tadej Pogacar riding for UAE Team Emirates, the defending champion, winner for the last 2 years, of course, outstanding favourite, hottest favourite, 6 stars out of 5, I'd say, in terms of his candidacy for the final yellow jersey in Paris. But he won't have it all his own way if Jumbo-Visma have anything to say about it. Primoz Roglic, who crashed out last year early on, crashed out of contention. He's had a bit more of a beefy build-up to this year's Tour de France. He won the Dauphiné and looking like he's kind of tailoring his form to come into the Tour de France pretty hot. He's got Vingegaard as his backup, of course, a very useful foil, just in case anything happens to Roglic. The third team, are we seriously considering an Ineos Grenadier, or have you got someone else in mind? Because Geraint Thomas has just won the Tour de Suisse.
No, I said three, but it's actually four, because I'm thinking about Bora, and I really, for me, the really intriguing rider in this Tour de France is Alexander Vlasov. But if you look at his record all year round, I mean, he's always been, you know, an aggressive rider, very consistent in all kinds of terrains, and especially in the mountains as well. And this year you can see, well, Bora as a team and Vlasov as a rider have gone one step up. If there's someone to really, you know, watch and be... because my impression of Jumbo-Visma is that they're slowly becoming like the Once of the of these days. Great lineup, almost two or three riders capable of the great GC standing. But in the end, they don't win. You know, that's what Once did for many, many years. I'm not sure the position Roglic is now with Vingegaard, as you say, as a backup, and which remains to be seen, is great in terms of team tactics. Ineos Grenadiers, I hope they're going to be aggressive and you know, really try to really blow up the race and make it very exciting. But as an homage to Richard, on the first year of the tour, I would say that to believe Geraint Thomas can win the Tour de France is kind of fanciful, right? And I don't know. I'm putting a little bit of my money if we have to do that on Vlasov. It would be strange to have a Russian win the Tour de France, given the circumstances we're in now. But I mean, to me, he's been really very, very impressive all season, and is always kind of overlooked in many ways. So, yeah, of course, Pogacar is up there. But once again, I really don't know. I mean, Jumbo have struggled to win the Tour for the last three seasons. They've had problems to get organized. for me, that the situation they're in with really two leaders at the same level is probably even more difficult to handle than in the past, which I'm not saying they're not going to, unless, you know, it's an exceptional year for Roglic, unless he's matured, unless he doesn't crash, unless he doesn't have a day, you know, un jour sans, as we said, unless... Well, it seems very tricky. And once again, as for Ineos, I think that they'll have a guy in the top five for sure. For sure. But
it's interesting, this idea of Ineos with the four-pronged attack. I mean, that would be Geraint Thomas, Dani Martinez, Tom Pidcock making his tour debut. Really excited to see how he gets on. And Adam Yates, who, of course, has been fourth in the tour before, a long while ago now, 2016. He's had COVID a little bit earlier this season. But that's a strong lineup, but perhaps without the potential winner. And then Bora Hansgrohe, of course, their Fab Four, pulled off a fantastic win at the Giro for Jai Hindley. Vlasov, Grosschartner, Kemner, Schachmann. It's a strong lineup, but it's not quite as dynamic looking as that quartet that they took into the Giro. But as you say, arguably Vlasov is podium potential here. I'd also chuck in Enric Mas as kind of a steady Eddie for Movistar. The French, Bardet, one last go. Pinot.
Hunting for stages and
the King of the Mountain jersey, perhaps, instead?
No, my impression, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, my impression is that the Bardet and Pinot, I mean, the kind of, you know, Thompson twins of the old guard, actually. I really think that they've settled on the idea that unless Bardet is in really astonishing form, but they've announced they were going for stages. I really believe, and that's what Thibaut Pinot, there was a long interview with Thibaut Pinot in L'Equipe today, and he really said how much pressure he felt for being the leader, and he's saying that Gaudu is far more built for that kind of pressure of being a GC leader than he is. So I think when Pinot says he's going for stages, I think he's sincere. Then you never know, the race can sometimes, you know, make you a different rider than you thought you were in the first place. As for Bardet, I really believe he also thinks he's going for stage wins. But if his form is anything like he was on the Giro, then anything's possible. But I think that they're both sincere in announcing they're not going for the GC.
The fundamental question, Mitch, is tactically, how does anyone stop Tadej Pogacar from completing his hat-trick, winning three in a row?
I think it comes back to, and I think to go back to Ineos Grenadiers, I think it's another element to why I think that team's going to be successful in this year's Tour de France is that four-prong attack, but also who's steering the ship. They've now got Steve Cummings steering that ship, Brett Lancaster as well. I think that's just an injection of new energy to a different tactic that Ineos hasn't followed ever that I've seen. And from what I understand, and I think they should, go with a bit more of an aggressive role. And I think that's the way to break Pogacar. I think the worst thing that could happen is Jumbo get the jersey early and they ride it like they have the last few years. That is setting it up for Pogacar to go the way about he likes it. I think the best thing that could happen is today Pogacar gets the jersey and suddenly they're having a control and all these teams are going to go at them. And if we see, like, and as we were discussing before, this would make an amazing tour.
And the first week is really set out to provide opportunities, isn't it? Because there could be an unpredictable stage in Denmark with crosswinds, difficult roads, sprinters trying to control, but, you know, the hectic nature, everyone's still right on edge because it's the first weekend of the tour and they'll be in their minds just thinking, get to France, get to France, get to France. And then, of course, after one day in France, it's hell for leather straight over the cobbles. And we've visited the cobbles a number of times in the last few years, 2010, 2014, 2015, 2018. But although there's only 11 sectors compared to 15 last time, 2018, this looks really, really difficult. There's some sections that have caused a bit of controversy with their inclusion. Some of the sports directors saying that they're too difficult for the Tour de France peloton. So that could be a really decisive stage. And then, of course, La Planche des Belles Filles, super La Planche des Belles Filles at the end of the week before we even reach the Alps. So it's almost like a difficult stage race in its own, a week-long stage race in its own right before the Tour de France proper gets underway with the real climbing in the Alps and Alpe d'Huez in week two.
And once again, to get back to Ineos Grenadiers, we know that the tactics for the past decade was always to have, like, you know, several floors to the rocket, several, you know, levels of the rocket in the climbs, and, you know, one after the other, the drop, and then the leader was left on his own to go and win the stage and win the Tour. But who would they do that for? With the lineup they have, who would accept? You see what I mean? Who would be the last, the last flight of the rocket? There's, I mean, on the first mountain stage, who would Yates work for? Who would Thomas work for? Who would Danny Martinez work? Work for? I mean, the only logic to that lineup, that's a very strong lineup, is to be aggressive and go for both for stage wins and try, as you said, to stir the shit a little bit.
It'd be great too. I think the parkour is going to do that. It's going to sort itself out. And that's why I'm singing the Geraint Thomas song, This Tour de France, because it suits him. This is going to be crazy. It's going to be crosswindy. 2016, who was in the front in Gent-Wevelgem? Thomas. When we go back to the cobblestone stages in the Tour de France, who was second in the cobbles? Thomas. Who's won the Tour? Thomas. He knows what to do. I'm picking him early.
And of course, he won the opening time trial in Dusseldorf in 2017, didn't he?
Well, once again, guys, we said we were not going to make plans or pronostications of anything of any sort, but we are.
This, though, is the great sort of joy and difficulty of any kind of Tour de France preview. You end up running through every permutation. One man we haven't mentioned for the GC, and I'm surprised, Mitch, you haven't thrown his name into the ring, Ben O'Connor, Australian rider, opening the batting for AG2R. Cricketer, in banging form, can put together 3 weeks, man to watch, certainly.
I wanted to say that before when you said, how about the French? And I was thinking, the only flag someone's going to fly for the French is Ben O'Connor for a French team. And I honestly think he went out on a limb and said, I have never finished on a podium in a World Tour race before. This is before Dauphiné. And he put the pressure on himself and he backed it up. And what I was most impressed about that was when Roglic and Vingegaard attacked, they initially got the gap, I'm talking about on the last stage, and he held the gap. He lost the time and he closed it on those two. And that was the most impressive thing about that third place for me, is he showed it at the end of a race, he's got the goods against two of the best climbers in the peloton at the moment. I'm picking him definitely for a podium. If anyone can shake up the win, I think he's a roughie for the win, but I think he's looking strong for a podium. If he's on that form anyway.
Well, of course, he was going great guns last year, wasn't he, for a long while. But before we inevitably name all 176 riders on the start list, we should probably wrap up our preview. We're going to chew over everything that happens over the next 3 weeks, aren't we? The opening week threatens to be a humdinger. Just a couple of things to mention before we wrap up this kind of scene setter, not really a comprehensive preview of the Tour de France, but two things to mention. One is that Stacey Snyder's batch of Tour de France ceramic cups, mugs, espresso sets go on sale tomorrow. That's Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time US and 3 p.m. UK time, and that's 4 p.m. Central European time. You'll have to work out from that if you're in a different time zone when they go on sale. They go on sale from her Etsy page, and you can find a link in our show notes. And also, tomorrow we will be unveiling the collaboration between the Cycling Podcast and our clothing partners, MAP. Very excited about this. More about this tomorrow, but keep an eye on MAP's social media tomorrow at some point, because they will be unveiling the first of 3 designs, which all of our listeners can then vote for, and the most popular design will go into production. A little bit more about that tomorrow, as I said. All that leaves me to say is the jazz starts up from the bar over the road from us. I don't know whether that's coming through the microphones, but it's taking the mood nicely, sliding into the Tour de France, I think, with a bit of jazz, a lounge jazz. We will reconvene tomorrow on the start line, 4 p.m. local time, when Jeremy Lecoq of B&B Hotels rolls down the start ramp, butterflies in his stomach, no doubt, probably butterflies in mine as well. But I'm glad to have got the first Tour de France podcast out of the way. I don't think we crashed, did we? We got through it. We live to fight another day, and we will be back with our recap of Stage 1 tomorrow. Before that, there's also an episode of Kilometer Zero, a slightly different Kilometer Zero series during this year's Tour de France, but again, more about that as we roll on. Mitch, you've got a dash off. You're going to an event this evening, appearing at the Rafa Cafe in Copenhagen. It will be too late. No one will be able to catch that because you'll be on stage there by the time this episode goes out, but good luck with that and see you tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's a bit of a dry argument. I finished my beer and it's almost time for another cold beer.
And Francois, we'll have to go to the press centre in the morning to collect our accreditation, and then we'll be legitimately inside the Tour de France bubble.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to cross the road and have a little bit of a little look at the jazz scene and a couple of beers as well, because apparently they sell beers and you can listen to music while having a couple of drinks. Sounds like a perfect start to the tour.
Well, off we go. Join us tomorrow for the first stage of the Tour de France. Thank you,
thank
Francois.
Thank you, Lionel.
And thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.